Welcome to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast, the official podcast of United Basketball Clinics, and presented by my good friends, Dr. Dish Basketball. I'm your host, Matt Smith. My hope is that as you listen to the podcast, you'll gain knowledge in culture building, leadership, and X's and O's so you can better lead your team. Now, let's grow the game together. We all have people in our lives that have impacted our lives greatly, and yet we have never met them. Dr. Tim Elmore is one of those individuals for me. Dr. Tim Elmore is the CEO and founder of Growing Leaders. He is passionate about growing leaders. He is passionate about working with millennials and now Generation Z. And we're going to discuss Generation Z, best practices in working with them, the stresses they have in their lives, the impact of social media, and what we're dealing with this current pandemic situation as these students are going back to school in some form in the fall. This is a great and impactful podcast. I'm looking forward to this interview a great deal. I want to welcome Dr. Tim Elmore to the podcast. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for coming on and joining us. What you have to say about leaders and working with Generation Z is so important in the unique times in which we're living with the pandemic and social unrest. And are we going back to school? Will it be online learning? How are adults and children going to interact? So your expertise is very valuable.
Well, thank you. It's a moving target, isn't it, right now? It's crazy. I was just talking to a school district yesterday, and we were using the term VUCA. It's what corporate America has talked about for years, V-U-C-A. We live in a time that's volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And other than that, it's easy to lead. So it's a strange time.
Right. The consistent thing is you never know what's going to change day to day, what my email from my administrator is going to say about what we're doing in the fall. Like, there's absolutely no consistency. So yeah, VUCA is a great term for that. And it causes a lot of stress on the young people that we're working with.
Well, it does. And I think psychologically speaking, the reason it does, young people or colleagues, whenever we're uncertain, it adds a little bit of an anxiety to our lives. And when we can't be certain or clear, both of those, our insecurities just go up. So whether we're great people or scared people or whatever, those two elements, uncertainty and unclarity, just don't help. And that's why I think it's imperative that we as leaders, teachers, coaches, and parents learn how to be good leaders in our homes and on our teams, not just know X's and O's, but how do we lead people, especially in this time?
Right. X's and O's, and my expertise in whatever subject I teach right now is economics.
Yeah.
That's not the most important thing right now. It's how to connect with these students when they come back, how to make them feel safe emotionally, and all those areas that many may not be receiving at home.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was years ago, I first heard somebody from FCA say, we're really good at the X's and O's, but not too good at the Jimmies and Joes. And that's really what we need to do, is better with people. And so hopefully understanding Gen Z in our conversation today will add value to a coach or a parent.
Absolutely. Well, let's just dive right into that. Like I said, most of our listeners are coaches, teachers, most of us parents. As we talk about Generation Z, what makes this generation so unique and so different from previous generations?
Yeah, that's a great question, Matthew. First of all, I think it's imperative that we realize they're not just a continuation of the millennials. I had a Division I NCAA coach say to me the other day, I'm trying to figure out these millennial athletes. And I chuckled and I said, the millennials are your assistant coaches, sir. You know, so Generation Z are basically the kids that have grown up in the 21st century. They have no memories really of the 20th century. So I've got a handful of words that might be helpful for your listeners that make them different. So the first word is private. They're far more private than the millennials were. Think about social media for just a minute. The millennials probably got in trouble by sharing way too much on social media, on Instagram or whatever. And then, you know, forgot they had the job interview where their potential boss could see that post. So Gen Z's learn from that and they're much more private. They'll use Snapchat over maybe another social media platform that could stay around a while. So that's private. They're also much more anxious. We'll probably get more into this in just a minute, but they are the most anxious generation of kids we've ever measured. Here's a nugget. Dr. Robert Leahy, who is a cognitive behavioral therapist, said, as we moved into the 21st century, here's what he said. The average teenager in America experiences the same level of anxiety as a psychiatric patient did in the 1950s.
Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah. I just don't think life was supposed to look that way, but it is what it is. So anxious, private. Here's another one. They're much more restless. Now, in one sense, that can be good for a basketball coach, but ADHD diagnosis has been way up in Gen Z, more so than the millennials. 11% of the population in Gen Z has been diagnosed with ADHD, and that's just the diagnosed ones. So it's very, this affects attention spans, which, by the way, are about 8 seconds in an average teenager today. Now, listen, that doesn't mean they can't pay attention longer to instruction. It just means we got to be very engaging. I mean, they'll binge watch Game of Thrones, you know? So we've just got to be very engaging, much more than past generations. Here's another word, tech savvy. Everybody gets this. Generation Z is so good, not just with a cell phone. That's millennials grew up with cell phones. These kids have grown up with smartphones. And so the world is at their fingertips and they're so savvy about, you know, about how to use it. I chuckle because my own two kids, they're both young adults now, but a typical scenario in my house, Matthew, is something goes wrong with my iPhone. I hand it to my son, who's in his 20s. He fixes it in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I go, how did you know to do that? And he'll say, how did you not know? I mean, you know, that's
right. Yeah.
Did you have those conversations too?
Yes. That's great.
So three more words I want to give you. Another one is nurtured. So at least in middle-class America, parents have been so often over-functioning. Can I say that? They mean well, but they're, you know, telling the coach what to say and what to do with their son or daughter. And we just feel like to be a good parent, you got to nurture, probably over-resource them in some cases, not all. And of course, the kid ends up less ready for life if they've been so well funded, you know.
Right.
I want to be careful to walk a balance here. Obviously, we want to resource our kids and be good moms and dads, but this nurture has sometimes reduced the grit levels and the resourcefulness in kids. So anyway, two more words. The next word is entrepreneurial. So 72%, Matt, 72% of the high school population, public high school population in America, wants to be an entrepreneur.
Yep.
So now, does that mean they're going to be successful entrepreneurs? No, they're not. But this is the gig economy. The Uber driver, this, that, and the other, you know, they're going to do a gig and have a gig on the side. So they're very much thinking that way. And we need to capitalize on that. And then the last word I would give you is the word redemptive. And this isn't just a spiritual word. They want to do something that makes the world better, that makes a difference, that changes the world. Not every kid, but right. A vast majority wanting to get a job one day that actually, you know, makes the world better. I'm not just making widgets on the assembly line. So those seven words I just shared, private, anxious, restless, tech savvy, nurtured, entrepreneurial, and redemptive, actually spell the word partner. And this is in the Generation Z book that I just released, just to put a hand, to give you handles for how do we connect with these kids? Well, we need to remember those words. It will describe who they are, I think, as well as any other piece of data that's out there.
No, absolutely. And as I work with teenagers and I, you know, in economics, as I teach, I definitely see the entrepreneurial part of this, how kids, some have a small business. Now they're doing things on the side. Yeah. They're doing things and making money sometimes that I couldn't imagine at 15 and 16. And many times they also want to make a big difference. The redemptive term that you use is right online. So we have that, these terms now. Yeah. How do people who are millennials and old and the generation before millennials, how do we connect with this generation, or what are some best practices to connect with Generation Z?
Wow. Well, let me first give a diagnosis and then I'll try to give a prescription. I did a book a number of years ago that I think resonated with many parents, teachers, and coaches because I try to put a finger on what culture have we created that's raising these kids, perhaps a little different than past generations. I use the term artificial maturity. And by the way, that sounds derogatory. It's really not. It's not these kids' fault. But think about this. Think about the average kid today. They are overexposed to information far earlier than they're ready. Yep. You know, preschool kids are on a tablet, you know, and online. But often they're underexposed to firsthand experiences far later than they're ready.
Yeah.
So this overexposure, underexposure, you know, produces a kid that looks very mature. For instance, you might see an 8-year-old little boy that can download the latest software and knows all of his math tables. And you might go, oh my, what a mature little kid. And my response might be, well, maybe not. That same kid at 16 might not be able to look an adult in the eye and have a conversation.
Right.
So cognitively advanced, but maybe emotionally and socially behind. And I bet there's some coaches out there that go, yep, that's my team. So they're smart as a whip. Oftentimes they're really good kids, but we haven't developed them in some categories, perhaps socially and emotionally, the way we should have, that makes a good teammate. So here's the prescription. It's another acronym. I hope this is helpful and not cheesy, but I use the word DICE in the Gen Z book, D-I-C-E. We got to roll the dice if we're gonna lead them. So the letter D reminds me, I need to start with a dilemma, not a curriculum. So often we teach kids just in case, not just in time. And by that, I mean, you're an economics teacher. Don't we have curriculum and we just start turning to page 57 in the textbook? And I'm going, I don't know if any kid is going, yeah, this is how I learn. I turn to page 57 in the textbook. They want to learn just in time, not just in case I need this algebraic equation. So if we create a problem or maybe even offer, here's a dilemma that the world faces or our community faces or our team faces, that's incentivizing to come up with learning and to come up with a solution. So I just think it's important that we realize kids learn on a need-to-know basis. We need to create a need-to-know with a problem.
And I believe if you do that, it also gives them a sense of ownership in the classroom, yeah, in the family, with the team, as opposed to just, here's what you're going to do. I'm not going to explain why. And this is when you must have it memorized by.
Absolutely. You so get it. So anyway, that's the letter D. The letter I in DICE is an image. You know, Matthew, I'm just big on images. We've got to leverage imagery and metaphor better in our communication. I think the best communicators all down through history have been able to paint pictures, yeah, in the minds of their listeners. So we actually developed an entire set of content called Habitudes. Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. So let's say the dilemma is we need to have better focus. Okay, that's probably relevant. You know, the average teenager is very much not focused. They're doing 17 million things at once. So you create the dilemma. Maybe you talk about how 65% of Americans say they're not focused. The image might be, one of our habitudes is rivers and floods. And it's a really cool photograph of a flood. It's a house being flooded. And we just say rivers and floods are both bodies of water. But after that, it's all contrast. A flood is water moving in every direction all at once and often doing damage. Rivers, on the other hand, are water flowing in a single direction because they have banks to them. And we just believe you gotta help these kids find their river, find their God-given river and flow. And by the way, in basketball season, a coach expects you need to be thinking basketball. Don't be thinking this, that, and the other. You know, you can't do 17 things at once. So anyway, that's the image. The letter C is conversation. We are way too high on monologue rather than dialogue as coaches and teachers and parents. We've got this lecture, you know, that sort of thing. I think if you lead with a dilemma and then an image, because pictures are worth 1,000 words, you're going to start a conversation. If you stop talking, coach, and say, what do you guys think? Or maybe have a well-crafted question for them that launches the conversation. But now you've got student engagement with that conversation. And then the letter E in DICE is the word experience. I just think we've got to be experiential teachers, project-based learning, experiential learning. So we've got to have some actual get up off your butt and do this type of thing, not just we had a good, you know, talk or we had a good discussion and now we're done. So I would say roll the dice, listeners, if you're going to connect with Gen Z.
Well, Well, I think one good thing from the pandemic, I say this as an educator, is all the state testing will be suspended in states like Georgia. So maybe teachers will feel like they can have more time to do lessons that call for true experience and not so much just going after the test and the test score and keeping the average and those types of things. So I think a lot of teachers, again, hopefully we're in the classroom a lot this next year, they will have more freedom to be the teacher they thought they were going to be when they first started.
Very well said. I think that's so true. And I'm hoping you're right. I most teachers I talk to don't want to teach to the test. They want to have an engaging, creative time. And you're right. Now may be our chance.
No, absolutely. I hope so. All right. Let's talk about the stress and anxiety of the generation, where it comes from. What can we help them? How can we help them cope with it? What can we do about it? Or is it just something that is, you know, kind of out of our control?
Yeah. Well, it's a little of both, but I'll say the obvious first. I think that American culture got ambushed by social media. I'm not saying it's there's demons under every bush or whatever, but social media, we didn't realize what all it was going to do to our brains, particularly a teenage brain. So what we have found, I'll just get straight to the point on this. This might be helpful for listeners to gauge how they lead kids. When you look at the data, okay, a kid that spends 2 hours or more on any given day on social media is more vulnerable to anxiety and depression. A person that spent or kid that spends less than 2 hours a day is much less, measurably less vulnerable to anxiety and depression. So for that parent or coach that goes, well, I can't take away their phone all the time, I would say, talk to them, have a conversation, show them that data or tell them about that data, and then say, how do you think we ought to handle this? When I did that with my kids, they actually made the decision as teenagers, I think I'm going to spend a little less time. And we just tried to have a basic rule in our home that once you got your 2 hours in, you don't need to be looking at Instagram any longer. We just get lost in it. And now we're followers, not leaders, and our brains get messed up. So I probably am overspeaking, but I just feel like that's a critical marker that we need to be aware of.
I agree 100%. And we'll just dive to the social media portion that was at the end and talk about it now. I don't see a lot of positive impacts from social media on teenagers. Is there any good thing about social media?
Yeah.
Or honestly, should that not start till they're 17, 18, a little older, a little more emotionally prepared?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually know families that say I didn't give my kid a phone until they were a junior in high school or senior. And of course they felt way behind, quote unquote. But I actually think there are a few good characteristics of social media, but you got to be very wise with it. For instance, social media is indeed a great way to connect with people that maybe you haven't talked to. Like you and I can talk to our, high school or college friends, that now we're older. So that's kind of cool. Another one is you can find great causes to give to or volunteer for or donate to, on social media. So if you're wise with it, if you make technology your servant rather than your master, and that's the problem, it's become our master rather than our servant. I think there's some good. Far too often, however, we just, our phones have just become a slave owner. Here's a phrase that I absolutely love. I just heard it last year for the first time. Check this out. When our phones had leashes, we were free. Now our phones are free and we have leashes. Yeah. So I think it's time for us as coaches, moms and dads and teachers to say, let's talk about what's real. Here's the research. Let's make wise choices. So we're not, no kid wants to be anxious. Now, if you just put it out to them, they go, I don't want to be that way. And I love the fact when I see a teenager go, I'm cutting back on this. And it was their decision, not mom and dad harassing them to do something that an old fogey wants them to do.
A couple of examples crossed my mind is I've had students in the last, 5 or 6 years who didn't have social media. And yet people give them a hard time about it and so on. But, nothing major, but they were more relaxed. And when we had free time in class or lunch or wherever, they were actually communicating with people, not going to their phones like I do as well. Like I go immediately to my phone. And I think of another particular example where I had, there were two older siblings, and the little daughter, who maybe in fifth or sixth grade, was talking about getting Instagram, and the older siblings were like, "Mom, Dad, don't let her get it.
Wow.
Don't let her get it." I'm thinking, yeah, man, if these 16 and 15 year old boys don't want their little sister getting it, that says a lot, that they know, they know what's on the other side of that app.
Yes. Well, let me volley back with another story. So in one of our focus groups that we did, that Andrew did on our team, he was talking to middle school kids and freshman high school. And one of the girls who was in high school was the only one in her friendship group that didn't have a phone. And but you can imagine she was much better with her emotional intelligence, her social intelligence. But when Andrew asked her, "Oh, you don't have a phone, huh? Do you wish you had a phone like your friends did?" She thought for a minute and listened to what she said. She goes, "No, I wish my friends didn't have a phone."
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Very insightful for a 14-year-old to say that, but they get it.
Problem is, a lot of the parents, and even me, and I'm pretty in tune with most things.
Yeah.
But I also realize that social media is so hard to track and so hard to monitor for the adults.
Yeah.
How do parents partner with their child to start that journey? And is there an age that you have in mind where that journey should begin?
Yeah, it's a great question. And obviously, I'm not going to say April on their 13th year, because I do think kids emotionally mature at different rates. So I think moms and dads and coaches need to look at the maturation level to see, are they running their own life, or is their life running them? You know, that sort of thing. Are they a slave to their phone, or are they a master? So that's one thing. The other thing I would say, though, is I know some parents that have somehow just surrendered to what's going on in culture, and they're letting kids have it, you know, in fourth grade, fifth grade. I would say certainly not before middle school. I don't know that any kid needs to have it before middle school. By the time they're in middle school, they might be playing sports, and you might, you know, as a mom, want to be able to reach your son or daughter. So I understand middle school. But even then, some of them emotionally are just not ready for all the apps they can get a hold of. So I would recommend, there's a number of apps that parents can get actually to help monitor. You just mentioned it's hard. It is hard. But I just did a blog post a few months back where I even talked, here's a half a dozen apps that you can get to actually watch and actually limit. Like, you can limit the phone's you know, intelligence, if you will, after a couple of hours or after 9 p.m. I know families very wise that say, put your phones in a basket at 9 p.m. You don't need to be on it. After 9, we're going to have a little family time. So anyway, that's what I would say. It's not a definitive answer, but hopefully it's a little bit of guidance.
I remember he is a pastor at one of Andy Stanley's churches. He was speaking one time, and he talked about how for his kids, they don't take their phone to the bedroom all night long. Yeah. So I think parents, you know, again, have a phone, but you've got to be prepared to have a little battle possibly with your kids about the parameters around it. And if they can't handle it, then you just don't give it to them this early. Coaching is all about relationships, and I've been blessed to have a great relationship with my good friends at Dr. Dish for several years. Not only do they offer the best shooting machine in the market, they also care deeply about coaches and players in your program. The Dr. Dish is about so much more than just, quote, getting shots up. Your players and team will have purposeful reps, get feedback on their shot, and there's hundreds of drills they can do individually and as a team. Follow them on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. Dish B-Ball. That's at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Mention this podcast and receive your exclusive discount.
Let me volley back with one thought. I think what you just said is really a mouthful. I hear moms and dads these days saying things like, my kids are asking Google and Alexa questions that I used to ask my mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a chip going on here. That's why, because our device, portable devices are so smart, we need to make sure that we create an environment where they're still seeking human connection. I don't think we'll ever not need that. But boy, if we're not taking charge and being leaders, we will throw up our hands one day and say, I've lost control. And now, who knows? So I don't want to create a paranoid picture, but I think we're on the same page. we've got to lead our kids in this way. And I think they'll thank us later when we do.
One last thought, we can move on to another topic, is I've told my team recently, if you've liked or put out there on any social media platform, you need to go back, delete it, deactivate, start a new account. Yeah. Because at some point in time, someone's going to sit around and thumb through your Twitter and go back to when you're 14 years old and try to hold that against you. Now you're applying for a job at age 23. Yeah. That's what I see the issue is. I made stupid decisions at 13, 14, 15.
Yeah, no doubt.
But they weren't in, I didn't, you know, describe them in stone, essentially what a cell phone is doing. So that's the worry, is you can be unwise, but it'll come back and haunt you when you're 25.
It's so true. And we live in a culture of outrage today. We're getting outrage over it. And you're right. This poor kid at 14, he did that stupid thing. He'll never outlive it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I know I'm rambling here, but here's another scenario that is very like what you just shared. When I was in middle school, if I was in the dining hall at the school campus at lunchtime and I drop my tray, I look really foolish to the seven or eight people around me. They clap or laugh or whatever, and it's over. Today, kid drops a tray. It's captured on a phone, posted, and now I'm the idiot for the next however many years. You know, maybe I never live that down.
Yeah, that's, and I've seen that with, and my administrators address these things, is one reason kids don't want to try new things or a sport or something at PE or in the classroom, because they're afraid of being a 7-second clip, and then you're spread all over that community and you're being mocked in comments. Yeah. And it really causes kids not to step outside the box and try new things. Cause like you said, I'm sure I tripped and failed, did things, said the wrong word, et cetera. Yep. But man, that is used to entertain and also just to mean these kids. And that's why they want to sit there and not talk for a 45-minute or an hour class, because they're afraid of someone videoing it.
And once again, there's the anxiety and the fear. It's really much a fear latent culture that we've got to undo, but it's only going to be undone when we're intentional as we lead them. So, and that means we may not be their pal, you know, because we limited their phone use. We got to make sure we understand what they need from us is to be a parent, not a pal, or a coach.
Right.
Not a buddy. And I think that's going to make the best leaders.
Well, I know that where I work, when I first went there was a cell phone guideline, but it wasn't really strict. And now every teacher takes the kids, check their cell phone in. They're supposed to. Then they get it back at the end of class. Like I call their name, Billy. Billy checks the cell phone in. And I'm just telling you, there's a difference in the classroom when the cell phones aren't there. Yeah. Teacher's not on their cell phone. There's just more freedom. And then when there's time to talk about something, we're talking, having discussion, as opposed to just running and looking at, you know, whatever happened on social media.
Yeah.
And I know every school has a different policies, but I think that's a wise one. Then they can use it in between class. They can use it during lunch. They can use it on breaks or whatever. But when you're there to learn, you're there to learn and stay focused.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
I want to talk about one of your most popular quotes, but one of the favorite ones that I've heard from you is, our job's to prepare the child for the path, not the path for the child. Can you unpack that a little more and just talk about that quote, and how can we, you know, put actions behind these words? We talked about a little before the first part of the conversation, but we don't want to over nurture, I guess. I don't know if that's the right phrase or not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So listeners, if you haven't heard this statement before, what Matthew just said is, our job is to prepare the child for the path, not the path for the child. So it's simply alluding to the fact that many parents today feel like that the report card for being a good parent is, you're paving the way for your children, doing all the front work, talking, negotiating with that teacher for that grade, or reminding them they need the backpack, or, you know, just doing all the front work. And our kids never learn to negotiate life for themselves.
Yeah.
So the right thing is to say, I'm going to prepare this kid, my child, to really be ready for anything. Which means, by the way, let's just say, I'm going to paint a picture. Let's say they're in the sixth grade and they forgot to bring their science project in on the due date. Instead of rushing it down, say, well, Josh, you're going to need to talk to your teacher. And I'm so sorry, I can't bring it down right now. I love you, but talk to your teacher and explain what happened. And yeah, you may be docked, but this is going to be so good for you, because one day you're going to get a project for your boss and it's going to be good for you to do it. And I know the parents that have done this. They have prepared kids at 18. They're not afraid of life. They're not afraid of college. They're not afraid of jobs. So we actually do a disservice by being this wonderfully nice parent that's doing all the resourcing. Okay, so how do we do this? Well, the first thing I would say is we've got to make sure that we realize that maturity comes when we offer appropriate levels of autonomy and responsibility. In other words, those two things always need to go together, and they should be in proportion to the maturation of your kid. So just stay with me. So 5 years old, your child's 5 years old, five-year-old autonomy, just a little bit, five-year-old responsibility, just a little bit. So they got a little freedom and they have a little accountability, but it's just a little bit. By 12, it's a little bit more on both. By 17, a little bit more autonomy, a little bit more. So as teenagers go through life, think about it. They're demanding more autonomy, right? They say things like, you treat me like a child. So-and-so gets to stay out till midnight. You make me come in at 11 p.m. What's going on? You know, you treat me like a child. And what I would say is, as a good leader in the home or on the basketball team, coach, I need to say, have you demonstrated that you can handle the freedom or the autonomy? And when you have, you're going to get, have you demonstrated appropriate responsibility? If you have, you get freedom with that. I'll give you a good illustration. I remember when my son turned 16, he didn't get a car right away. He had to save up half, and I paid the other half. And so he ended up getting a used car eventually. But for about a year and a half or so, he drove the family car. Well, you can imagine on Friday night, he wants to go out with his friend Ben, and he'd say, Dad, can I borrow the car keys? And I would smile and I'm saying, you're asking for autonomy, right? He goes, yes, because he's heard me say this. I throw him the car keys and I might say something like, okay, fill up the tank with gas. What? Fill up the tank with gas? You know? And then I would smile and say, or you can make a car payment. It's up to you. Either one. You know? Right. And he's going to laugh because he totally got it. But the point is this. If we're parents that give lots of autonomy and no responsibility, we're going to create brats. I'm sorry. I'm just going to be honest. We're going to create brats when they're 21 and nobody's going to want to be around them. Yeah. Now watch this. If you give them a ton of responsibility and no autonomy, like a homeschool kid maybe, that maybe in that situation, I'm not saying all homeschool kids are, but you know, they're just really under mother's little apron and they're not ready to be free. That's not good either.
Yeah.
Those two pieces, we've got to gradually give them more of if they're going to be ready for that. I'm ready to take whatever path comes my way.
Yeah, no, it always cracks me up when you work with a teenager and they want to be treated like an adult. And the minute something happens, they go call their mom. I'm like, whoa, what is it? You want to be treated like an adult? Because adults don't run and call their mom.
That's right.
How do you want both worlds? Because you can't have both worlds.
It's so true. That's exact. And that probably happened with you and me too. But it's
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's where I think we need to call them on it. In gentle love, we need to say, now, wait a minute. You said you wanted to be treated like an adult, but now you really don't, do you? And I think that might be an epiphany for them to realize, I guess there's a price tag and a perk to being, you know, treated like an adult.
That's a great point. That's a great quote that we can all learn and grow from it and try to put into practice. And I had another thought while you were talking about that is millennials have been called a very entitled generation.
Yeah.
And now millennials are leading Generation Z in a lot of areas. Yep. Is there an issue there or is there a rub there at all with this? Because I think that, you know, we talk about the participation trophy culture. And I always say this, kids don't go make their own trophies. Adults are giving it to them. Don't
That's
be right. kids.
Yeah. It's so true. So there is an issue. Yeah. When I've looked at the data, it's not just you and me going, yeah, kids are more entitled today. It clearly is happening for sure. But let me just say this just for perspective. In many ways, all of us feel more entitled than people were 100 years ago.
Yes.
Think about it. We feel entitled to an air conditioned house in July. Well, 100 years ago, they didn't have air conditioned house in July. So we naturally are evolving into a culture that, you know, where we're more in touch. So we need to admit that, because they're going to go, Mom, Dad, you are too. But here's what I would say. Clearly, we did create a more entitled millennial generation in our desire to be good parents. Generation Z can be too, but I do see the pendulum swinging. Confidence is morphing into caution. You know, that whole idealism is morphing into pragmatism. So I think we have a good chance to say, well, the economy's tough right now. Think about it, this pandemic.
Yeah,
it's tougher right now. They know they're going to graduate into a harder world. In fact, many of them have said to me in a focus group, I feel postponed. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. I feel postponed. So I think they're going to realize, yeah, I can't expect this to be handed to me on a silver platter. And maybe this is our time to really begin to build, I believe, a reciprocal to entitlement, which is gratitude. I know it's not an antonym, but Matthew, I'm telling you, if I produce a kid, an emerging adult, that may not have everything they want, but they're so grateful for what they have, boy, that makes me want to resource them even more as a parent, resource them even more as a coach. So I would say, coaches listening, as old-fashioned as this sounds, build gratitude in your teams. By the way, I'll give you a good illustration. We work with the University of Michigan basketball team, and we sent them a set of our habitudes, the images, and they said, could you create one on gratitude? And we did. Mm-hmm. In fact, let me give it to you right now. It's called Fountains and Drains. I find that people tend to be either fountains or drains. Have you been around a draining person? I'm sure you have, Matthew.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. You want to avoid them in the hallway. I hope you never, I don't want to see you because they sap the energy from you. It's like a drain in a sink. All the water goes away rather than coming out. In a fountain, the water's flowing and overflowing beautifully. People go to see fountains. So I'm saying, if we can build our basketball team to be fountains, not drains, every time I got a little complaint coming, I'm going to come up with something I'm grateful for. I'm going to express how grateful I am for this, that, or the other, whatever it is, my mom, my dad, this car, whatever. I'm telling you, this is what I think. I probably sound like a grandpa right now, but we've got to build this in this next generation for sure.
No, that's really good. And very wise words there. Any suggestions or thoughts for parents who are possibly going to be at home for another semester?
So let me share a couple of quick thoughts that might be really practical. One is value schedules. If you're all stuck at home and you've got your stuff you got to get done, but then you've also got to facilitate your child's learning, security, emotional security comes in kids when there are clearly outlined schedules. They may not like it, but they certainly won't do well in their mental health when they're just, it's totally up to them to, you know, do whatever they want, whenever they want it. So have a clear-cut schedule as you go into the fall and make sure that you follow it too. It mm-hmm. can't just be for the kiddos and you're not modeling the way, adults. But that's number one. Secondly, Matthew, I have a free resource that we just created that I'd love to offer.
Sure.
On our Growing Leaders website, there's something called Home Chats, HomeChats, Home Chats. And it's five of our habitude images. Remember, I've mentioned a couple of them here. It's five of our images that's a worksheet to start conversation. There's little activities you can do. There's an image that sparks the conversation. But it's five meaningful conversations that we think parents and kids need to have while they're stuck at home.
Okay.
So Home Chats on growingleaders.com. If you just look on our website, you'll find Home Chats, and you can just download them for free. But then, at the risk of sounding like a salesperson, I just wrote a book called The Pandemic Population that I'd love to make available. It comes out mid-August, but it's a short book, just a practical plan to help kids come through this very different year with a positive narrative rather than a negative narrative. I think we're going to see some, you know, negative, understandably, negative attitudes about, oh my gosh, life sucks, you know. And I just think it's going to be up to us as the adults to make sure they come through with an accurate memory of the pandemic, but a positive narrative. So that's a book called The Pandemic Population, and it will be at growingleaders.com. There's a page right now with pre-orders, but that'll be available. If that sounds helpful to anybody, It's very practical, and that will give a little guidance to how do we lead these kids through this very, very new normal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because I think a lot of adults are thinking, oh my gosh, this is not over.
Yeah.
Another 3 or 4 months of this and
yeah.
Full-time jobs or looking for a job, working nights and childcare, so many things. And we'll definitely use your resources and put those out there for the listener. But thanks so much for coming on, Dr. Elmore. Any last thoughts or positive thoughts for the listener as we are striving to be impactful leaders for this generation?
Absolutely. When this pandemic first broke out and we all were sent home, I began to study what did people do to thrive in past pandemics. And actually, this is the fourth one we've had in the last 100 years.
Okay.
Global, it's crazy. You wouldn't know that. But I want to tell a quick story to close this out that's just so inspiring to me. Back in 1665, the Black Plague of London, the Great Plague of London, broke out. It was a part of the larger pandemic, the Black Plague. But during that year, 1665, young Isaac Newton was going to college. Now, we all know Isaac Newton is this brilliant modern-day scientist, you know, who did all these things. Well, he gets sent home in their own version of social distancing back then. And while he's at home, instead of just goofing off or vegging like many of us have done, he actually continues learning on his own.
Yeah.
He invents calculus. He actually invents calculus. Now, some people might go, that's not good news. But anyway, he invents calculus. He comes up with his theory on optics because he had a prism at home and started looking at it, came up with his theories on optics. And then it was during that time he was home that proverbial apple fell from the tree that we've all heard about, and he came up with the laws of gravity and the laws of motion. 1 year later, he returns to Cambridge, has his theories with him in hand. Within another year, he becomes a fellow, and within 2 years, he becomes a professor as a young man. And I'm just saying to everybody listening, a pandemic is a terrible thing to waste. We need to leverage this and say, what could be happening right now that would have never happened in our normal busy routines where we're just, you know, maintaining our life that we could do because we're stuck at home? That's the big question, I think, of the hour.
That's a great thought to take us out on. And thank you so much for sharing your time, your expertise with us. And man, you've been an encouragement to me over the years as I follow you, read your blogs, watch tons of YouTube videos, and, you know, hopefully this podcast will give some people some thoughts of how to work with the generation, also an encouragement to them as we are all striving together for the same outcome.
Yeah, you bet, Matthew. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the United Basketball and Leadership Podcast. Please take a moment to leave us a review and also leave a comment about what you enjoyed most about today's guest. You may also use the hashtag #UnitedPodcast to tweet out any tips that you learned from today's guest. I hope you'll join us on our next episode.